Welcome to the News Drive at 5 conversation series here on WSIC News Talk Radio. I am Patrick Reynolds, taking you home this afternoon, and I am joined alongside, here in the Cornelius studios from WSIC, Republican member of the North Carolina Senate representing the 37th district. Do I have the district right? Vicky Sawyer, Senator Vicky Sawyer is alongside me. How are you?
I'm doing great. And you know what? That is a legitimate question about what number district I am. Because I've served, although I have not moved, my district number has changed every 2 years.
The district number has changed, and I believe the boundaries of where have changed on you as well. Well, you used to represent a certain section of the map. Now you no longer do and represent a new section of the map. That's evolved since you've been in office, correct?
It has. So when I got appointed and how I met Representative Jason Sain, who's another host on the show or on this radio station.
Sure is.
I met him because I was his senator for Lincoln County. The Republican Senate district for Iredell County had always been broken up. And so that portion, we had the southern Iredell and then all of Lincoln and a little bit of Gastonia. And that was the Senate district. Because of courts and redistricting and suing and all this other stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. Fun stuff with lawyers.
Isn't that fun? I'm very grateful that we're able to keep lawyers in business. I'd be afraid how they would feed their family if it wasn't for the General Assembly and the Republicans. Anyway, so yeah, so it changes every 2 years almost. And so this time I am now in all of Iredell County. I have Cornelius. And I'm running for the seat that will also include the town of Davidson.
Right, Davidson. Now, that would be a brand new footprint for you as well as Cornelius. You've represented Iredell County before, and I'm asking legitimately because I want to make sure I get your map footprint, so to speak, right for myself and for our audience. Cornelius and Davidson, new for you.
Close. Town of Davidson is new.
Town of Davidson, new.
Cornelius is in my current district. Okay. I had a little bit of Huntersville before. But really now it's a more compact district that encompasses the lake community. So Lake Norman, you know, goes to Lake Davidson, Town of Davidson. Part of the Town of Davidson is actually in Iredell County. So it's just really more of a compact, neater district. And I love calling it home.
All right. Then Lincolnton, Denver, that area down to Gastonia, that is no longer part of your jurisdiction.
Correct.
Okay.
That's right.
So it's new number, 37th district, new mapping. How do you keep up with that?
I don't. Just because someone's name's on the ballot and you elect them doesn't give them some magical power to know everything.
Yeah.
And I'm the absolute poster child for that.
Who decides this stuff? How do we get into, or am I opening up a can?
No,
we got
go
time
ahead.
To talk. Who decides this? How is it decided? We're going to have these district boundaries. And it's not just you. Everybody has been affected. All the representatives. Who decides all this?
All right. I'm going to try not to nerd out on this.
You can nerd.
I can nerd.
Your microphone is on a stack of comic book encyclopedias.
Yes.
So I am in favor
okay.
of that. Nerd out on
all
me, girl.
Right,
go for it.
Nerd out on it.
Bring it.
Well, North Carolina State Constitution.
Okay.
It says that we have to have proportional representation for our Senate and House districts. So basically, it's just a function of math. You have to have so many people in a Senate district, and people move and change, and North Carolina's growing. As those North Carolina grows, then you have to change those districts around. And that's just simply how it works. Now, constitutionally, you have to do that once every 10 years. Since the General Assembly took, the Republicans took control in the General Assembly in 2010, they got to redraw the maps. That was a redistricting year. And they've been sued ever since.
Yeah, that I knew, is that somebody is always suing about district.
Right.
Because that affects, I guess where I really hear about it is that the school systems where parents complain or are happy, one or the other, where their kids are going to school, they move for an area for a school system, and then suddenly a district moves them out, and they call a lawyer.
Yeah.
That's where I hear about
that's
it.
That's right. Yeah, so that's exactly right with those school board boundaries, and that is a good way to kill a superintendent.
Oh, goodness, yes.
You know, a superintendent comes in, as soon as you hear the redistricting words, you know that they're going to be out of there after the redistricting's over.
Yeah, that's their last hurrah. So
it's their last hurrah. But it's hard because, you know, you want to, not speaking for school board authority because I don't have that, but you know, you as someone who's managing all of these kids, you know, we have schools that are overpopulated and some that aren't. And so you want to balance that out so the kid gets the best education. And sometimes you have to move those district lines.
So that's a lot. What I'm seeing is the catalyst is really people moving in or out to of an area. Population rises, population drops. You've got to have equal representation. So that's where the district is.
It is. So luckily, my district only has two counties in it, but there's districts out west, a Senate district that has like 11 counties. I think the same is true for Northeastern North Carolina. They have like 11 counties. Some of these guys and ladies who are running for those Senate districts are driving 4 hours across their district.
Goodness.
Could you imagine?
4 hours.
But because the population is growing. Yeah, it's growing here along the I-85 and 40 corridors. But it's actually depleting in our rural areas in North Carolina.
But your heartbeat, it seemed like a central nucleus, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Iredell County, or at least is southern part, northern, whole Iredell County. Where is that?
I'm all Iredell County.
You're all Iredell. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They try to keep counties together.
All right.
Yeah.
And that's close. Let's get into who you are.
Yeah.
That's close to where you grew up and you're a native of the area.
Close.
Close.
So,
not
now,
there.
As a crow flies, as they say in the southern.
Bring it on. I love the southernisms.
Yes, right. So I grew up in Davidson County, North Carolina, and that is just a couple counties over from here. So not too far.
Not too far.
Off Highway 150, by the way. So if you live in Mooresville, you're very familiar with North Carolina Highway 150.
Oh, give it up for Highway 150.
Yeah, whoop, whoop. So I was born in a community off of Highway 150. I moved to a community off of Highway 150, two counties over. I'll probably die off of Highway 150. And maybe I should be, my ashes should be spread along Highway 150, because I feel like that's where I spend my time stuck in traffic.
Well, at the speed that we go, we could get you, like, might take all day, but we could get you east to west, probably the whole thing.
Before,
just creep along every stop line, throw a little Vicky out.
Yes, exactly. It's probably going to happen when that construction finally is over. I'll be wheeled out in my chair, kind of like a bless his heart, Jimmy Carter is at this moment.
Oh, my gosh. I feel like Highway 150 will eventually be widened long after you and I are going to be spread somewhere.
No, we have assurances. The money's in the bank, so to speak. So it's coming. It's coming. Not as fast as I would like, and nor at the time they told us.
Yeah, that's true. I've lived in the area, not a native myself, but 23 years. So I have seen a considerable amount of change in Iredell County, Mooresville, that area. And the talk of widening Highway 150 was part of the conversation right back when I was working with my first realtor, hadn't even bought a piece of property here yet.
Yeah.
That was a conversation then, but I understand a lot more how it works and how the delays happen.
Yeah.
And people want to dump it on you.
Sure.
It's
easy.
Not.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I didn't think so.
No, it's easy to find someone that you can put your anger onto. And if that's what they want to do, fine. I believe that it makes me a better representative to listen and hear what they have to say so that I can bring their concerns to the actual decision makers who decide when construction is going to happen.
I think that's one of the things I've learned the most on hosting the News Drive at 5 and getting some one-on-one with some local newsmakers and politicians is where the jurisdiction or duties, I should say, lie and don't lie. Because the person I know, say you, why don't they, the infamous they, meaning Vicky, why don't you just rub the genie lamp and have, you know, Highway 150 widened, you know? Yeah. And I know it doesn't always fall on the person that I'm talking to. It's been a fascinating education on politics on that. Do you get that a lot, though? You must get that a lot, where people just fire at you, hey, why don't the infamous they do things?
Yeah, I do. And again, that's okay. I want them to talk to me and communicate with me. I would prefer them to ask me the question, even if they're in anger, than for them to just think and assume that it is all my fault, right?
Right.
Give me a shot. Let me talk to you, and let me see if I can do anything to fix your problem.
I'm sure you can, and I know you take a lot that's not totally up to you. News Drive at 5 continues on here in our conversation series. Patrick Reynolds talking with Vicky Sawyer. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the News Drive at 5, our special conversation series, where Patrick Reynolds gets to talk one-on-one with a local newsmaker. I am alongside Senator Vicky Sawyer. Thank you so much for the time today. Great to sit and talk with you.
I'm so grateful that we got to finally do this.
Finally.
Well, we've been around each other for a long time.
Long time, yeah.
And just haven't had the time to sit down and talk. So thank you for inviting me on your show.
I thank you for accepting it and coming into the studio. I saw you digging our theme music here.
I like it. Yeah. I love music. It's so much fun.
A little upbeat news style of music. Yeah, there you go. There's, yeah. You know, producer Bill helping us out with the audience. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, a little thing there. Introduce it again. Hey, News Drive at 5. Patrick Reynolds alongside Vicky Sawyer. Sincerely, though, thank you for finding the time here. Sure. Not your first time in the studio, though. You host, let's talk about your show.
Yeah.
Your regular host here on WSIC News Talk. Every Friday is live at 11 a.m. Tell us about the show. What do you talk about? What do you get into for their new listeners that maybe not know that you also host a show here, right here on our network?
Yeah, well, lately what I've been doing is getting into trouble on that show.
Excellent.
Is it?
That's good radio.
Yeah,
yes.
Is it? So during COVID, it started, and there was so much information coming out, and there was an opportunity at the station for that time period. Mm-hmm. Actually, Representative Jeff McNeely and I started out together, and then I realized that I just wasn't a big enough personality to balance Jeff McNeely. He needed his own show. So he started on Mondays because that fit his schedule.
Right.
And I took Fridays because that fit mine.
Right.
And it just became a blessing of a conduit of information for me to be able to communicate through radio to constituents in our area. I say this on the show a lot. My goal on this show is not to get the number of Twitter likes or worry about social media, any of that stuff. My goal on the show is to talk to people who vote for me. And this is the best way for having people listen and know exactly what I'm saying without having to read through a press release or filter through some sort of social media, any of that stuff. It's, for me, it's about everybody who lives at home, and I want to talk to those who live at home.
Mm-hmm. So you co-hosted with Jeff McNeely. By the way, I've done a one-on-one with Jeff McNeely. You mentioned Jason Saint early. A one-on-one with him. Happy to say this. You know, thrilled to have fellow hosts on here that I get to sit down and talk and get to know. But is that why you chose WSIC News? You could have gone anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, on a, I guess, a platform, radio, television, social media, something. However, this is WSIC. You chose us. Does that fit your, the people that voted you, the demographics, that Venn diagram? Do they cross over, I guess, is what we said?
Yeah, you know, it fits very well because I am a student of public or of talk radio. Okay. I listen and have listened to talk radio ever since college. And driving around, I used to go door to door selling books.
Okay.
I was one of those. I did not last very long. But while I was sitting there driving around Charlotte in my, let's see, I think it was a 1981 Rabbit VW diesel vehicle loaded down with books, trying to peddle these things, I was bored and I wanted company. And so I found NPR right at that point, because it was the only thing really in
talk
Charlotte
radio.
That in talk dark, and we had WBT at the time. But the first thing that I found, because it was on the FM dial, is NPR. And I started listening and I was like, well, this really actually makes me think. And it's cool to think, right? And then I found, of course, Rush Limbaugh, and then listening to WBT. And I'm still a listener. Sorry, WSIC. But I still listen to WBT, especially in the podcast format, because I just enjoy learning from others. And that's, for me, what talk radio is. And that's what I try to do on my show, is to give my perspective to those who vote and listen to me. And I hope that those listeners enjoy it. But I really, truly have fun with the show.
Mm-hmm. So what's the core information for your audience and what you talk about? As a politician, I know it's not just a nonstop campaign promo. You talk to your listeners about, well, topics, you know, the important things that affect the community.
Yeah.
I guess that's what your core, that you come into a show and say, gosh, I really have to inform the audience of topic, you know, A, B, and C.
Absolutely.
Today.
That is the goal. In fact, I have been accused so many times of being the worst self-promotion person out there. I am a politician who doesn't carry a card. I do not have handouts, and I hardly ever promote myself or on the show. And I've been told that over and over again, because really that's not my goal. My goal is to communicate about very difficult topics through a medium, which I think is one of the most effective mediums around, and that is radio, especially when we're talking about conservative values.
Yeah.
It is very important for us to permeate and let folks understand where we're coming from. So this week we talked about elections, but not about vote for who, vote for not for, or not to vote for, but why are people and how are polling and what's going on. But we also talked about the DMV. So I chair mm-hmm. transportation or co-chair transportation in the Senate. One of my big issues is the North Carolina Department of Motor Vehicles, where hopes and dreams go to die, or at least your whole day.
If you have a dream for the day, it's going to be another day, not that day.
Yeah, or if you have a dream of getting an appointment in less than a month and less than 25 miles away, then that is obviously out the door. But I want to bring, and we're going to ask these questions of the agency, and these are questions that I hear from my constituents who are asking me, why can't I get an appointment? So we're going to put them under oath, and we're going to ask those questions, and then I'm going to talk about the results of those questions on the show. Because for me, that's information that folks really need to understand is, why is it so jacked up? Why?
Fair question.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about that title, Chairwoman of the Transportation Committee. Sure. That is a sub title or sub office you hold, I guess, on top of being a senator in Raleigh. What is the Transportation Committee? What does that do?
Yeah, that's a great question. It does not build roads. I don't have control over where I put a stoplight.
Okay.
I have no idea and have no influence on if that housing development is going to be houses or if it's going to be apartments.
Okay.
Right? I don't have that. But what I do have and I use to its fullest is the power of investigation and the power of the pen. So we, as the Senate, will write a budget for the agency. In other words, we take the money that you have given to Raleigh that has been designated for transportation, and we put that money into buckets. And then we give it to the agency to spend that money out of those buckets. And then most importantly, we review their spending to make sure that they spent the money accurately, wisely, and in the intention and manner that we intended. That is what a transportation chairperson does. We give the money and we watch the money, and that's it. But that's a big part, because if you know, before I got to be transportation chair, the Department of Transportation ran out of money.
Mm-hmm.
There was no oversight. It was the reason why Highway 150 and North Carolina 73 have been delayed, because the department was mismanaged and they ran out of money. My goal, and it's not sexy or cool or fun, and I can't cut ribbons on roads, but my goal is to hold the agency accountable for the promises they've made to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that hasn't happened in a long time, but we have seen great movement moving forward.
Well, so let's hit you with a question. I know the audience is probably screaming into the radios now. You talked about the roads and we would hypothetically be great to have a ribbon cutting sometime. We joked about Highway 150 earlier. Highway 73, another great topic of conversation. When do you think we would actually see those roads widened that has been talked about for so many years?
So remember, that is a function of the Board of Transportation.
Mm-hmm.
The Board of Transportation is appointed mostly, or the majority of it, by the governor until recently. And then now, some of those appointees are appointed by the General Assembly, but the majority of the decision makers are appointed by the governor. So all I can tell you is what the governor's people have told me.
Fair enough.
Okay. And you also can look online at the NCDOT website, and you can look for something called the STIP, and that is the 10-year construction plan, right, and it will publicize when things are going to move. Now, for Highway 150, the division engineer has told me that you should see dirt moving. And then he has this weird look on his face, and he kind of halfway smiles, and he says, October of this year. Now, I think his delivery makes me nervous, because it seems like he knows some things are not going to happen.
Right.
So, but let's understand why. There's a lot of things that go into building a road, and a lot of them revolve around property rights and the right-of-way property acquisition. Now, everybody thinks that a piece of property is worth something. We all have an opinion on what their property is worth, right?
Everybody does.
Yeah. But when you see the state of North Carolina asking to buy your property, I think that value goes up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You think of the value of your right. It takes time to get those purchases underway. Not everybody plays by the same rules, and it takes time to get the right-of-way acquisition going. It takes even more time to move utilities.
Oh, yeah.
Think about this. So we have given the utility companies free passage in our right-of-ways. And when it's time to build a road, the engineer goes, okay, guys, come move your utilities. And they'll go, well, we had a storm down east, so we don't have anybody available. or we can move it this time, but these guys are in the way. And it is absolutely a house of cards that if one utility company cannot get out there, the rest of them are all thrown off schedule. It can take up to 18 months once you get all that right of way purchased to get those utilities moved. That's something I'm working on. It's a bill that I have. It's we're working on it right now about how we can empower the DOT to move all of the utilities at one time through a third-party vendor. Then it'd be accurately, other states do this, Georgia and Florida do it, so this is not unheard of. Mm-hmm. But when you design the project, you design to move the utilities all at the same time by one contractor or several contractors, and then they're accurately marked, moved, and taken in a timely fashion.
So coming up on a break here shortly.
But sure.
I think it was your words that I heard you on air say, how do utilities just put it in on the side of the road and say, okay, that's how it is? And we maybe have to continue this answer after the commercial.
Yeah, happily talk about it.
Yeah, I think it was your words that said, who gave Duke the right to do this?
And I know.
They just are. And we all just kind of take it for granted as part of life.
Right.
That's our next question. That's our topic. We're up on a break here. News Drive at 5 Conversation Series with Vicki Sawyer continues. Thank you for tuning into WSIC. I am Patrick Reynolds. We'll be back right after this. News Drive at 5 Conversation Series rolls on. I am Patrick Reynolds, taking you home on this Friday afternoon alongside Senator Vicki Sawyer. Appreciate so much that you give us some time here in the studio. Thank you for sitting in with me and chatting a little bit.
It's actually a great honor for me to be here.
Oh, the honor is mine.
Oh gosh. Niceties.
All this. We got to each take our insulin shots here with all the sweetness going on. I like to pick this back off right where we left off the last break.
Sure.
The utilities right on the side of the road. Again, a fundamental question. Who says they can do that? Why do they do that? How is that part of the process here? Because that's holding things up when we want to widen a road. How is that happening in the first place and why?
Yeah, so it goes back, and I'm pulling this information from a book that I love, and it's called Kerr Scott and the Branchhead Boys. It is very in the weeds, political, not documentary, but kind of like a documentary of North Carolina politics that goes all the way back to the early 30s and talks about it at a statewide level. But think about North Carolina 100 years ago. We were all farming, right? Big tobacco and cotton. That was the big deal. And electricity was something that wasn't in every home. And the leaders of North Carolina said, I want electricity in every farmhouse. That's a big deal. We have to have it. So part of the grand plan was that North Carolina built roads. Right. At that point, some of the counties had some, but for the most part, counties, the roads were built by North Carolina. They had an asset there. They wanted to be able to get electricity to these farms. And the easiest way, because it was already paved, is to put poles up and string out the electricity. And they wanted to have it done. So that's why the deal was struck the way it is. And
okay.
We've been that way ever since.
So the roads are built and the electricity just follows the road and that's that.
Yeah.
And now comes, hey, we need to widen the road. And that is what you were referring to as, oh boy.
Yeah. And think about this. So you got 100 years of placing utilities beside roads. Now, it's not just one utility. It's maybe 17 in varied areas that were put in at different times, all within a 10-foot depth. So when you open a hole to look at utilities, you don't see that. It's not like it's just accurately marked which utility is what, or it was put where it was supposed to be, or, you know, it's construction. It's hard to know. And also the information on these utility placements weren't very well kept over time, right? It is now, but at the time when they just put some fiber in the road or whatever in the road, then, you know, a line down the center of the road for AT&T. Or Windstream. I mean, think about when we all were attached to a wall when we spoke on our phone.
I am old enough to remember.
You're old enough to remember. Yeah. So those also got buried. And so it's just very hodgepodge of utilities, and it's hard to accurately identify and move those.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, as you said, record keeping as well. When I research anything, the further back I go, the less records were kept, as opposed to, you know, in the last 25 years, I hit my laptop or my phone, the information's there. For research-wise, but going back, I don't know what years we're talking about with electricity here. It's like, 19-something, 18-something. I don't even know. My history major is probably yelling at my radio right now. My daughter's screaming at me like, how do you not know this? But yeah, it's at that point, record keeping, they probably didn't, never thinking that they would need it. What difference does it make then? Big problem now.
Yeah. And that takes a lot of the issues of road construction. Highway 150, if it weren't for moving utilities, would already be under construction. In other words, you would be seeing dirt move right now.
Okay.
It is all a function of moving those utilities, and that is a big issue. That's why I'm trying to look and model other states' behavior who have had and solved this issue so that we could pass a legislative fix to empower the department to be able to just handle it all at one time.
Mm-hmm. I have seen in my time living in Mooresville, I have seen the growth. I have seen buildings get built and then tenants move in, businesses thrive. Then because of the widening of the road, the tenants were forced out and the building leveled.
Yeah.
I've been in town that long to see all that happen. Well, and now I see an empty lot where I saw it built, you know, within the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And now it's getting ready to widen.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah, it is. Mm. And it's, you know, it's growth. So think about all of these problems or opportunities that we're talking about. Because I'm going to stop talking about them as problems. It is terrible to be stuck in traffic and not be able. It is. I do not like it. If you're stuck in traffic right now, I am so sorry. I work every day to make sure that doesn't happen. But I also want to talk to you about a community called Fair Bluff, North Carolina, and that's in Eastern North Carolina. And let's talk about what problems they have that are not going to be solved with just a sack of concrete, right? They have lost population. They cannot attract and retain a doctor. They are not able to keep their school open because they're losing population. If you get sick in an emergency, you cannot get to a healthcare provider in a timely manner.
Mm.
You know, here, if I get sick and have a heart attack, I'm of the age that if I get a, I mean, I'm in that like widowmaker window.
Stop.
Here.
As
a 48. Yeah, I am. But you know, if I get sick, then I have a reasonable expectation to be able to receive care through some of the world-class facilities and hospitals here, right in our region, within a 20-mile radius. That doesn't happen in Fair Bluff, North Carolina, right? If I enjoy my warehouse shopping experience, I'm not plug, but the one I enjoy, I go to. If I was in there, I would have to drive an hour and a half to go find the family groceries. Some of those places don't even have a grocery store. Those are real problems that are not easily solved because there isn't the tax base, there isn't the growth. In fact, there's a economic sucking out of all of their tools that they can use as local leaders to provide services for the communities that they're supposed to be in.
Mm.
So for me, those are problems. That is big issue, horrible things that have to be all hands on deck approach on how do you fix and help a community that, and I pick on Fair Bluff, but that is the same story that's all up and down this Eastern North Carolina seaboard, right? We all know it. You go to the beaches and you just get away, 40 minutes away from the beach, and you go through this place and you're like, where am I? It's like another world, right? It is. And it's littered with sometimes those predatory gambling centers that come up, you know what I mean? And drugs and alcohol abuse is a very serious problem. And it's just, there's a lot of things there that need help. So for me, yes, I am tired of getting stuck in traffic. I do not like 150 track or 73. Yes, I get it. But I work every day to fix it. But it's a fixable problem. Mm. Those down there are not fixable problems.
You talk about Fair Bluff and we'll call them problems there. And I liked your pivot here when you corrected yourself from problems to opportunities, because it is wonderful to be in a place that so many people want to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of managing it. You've described the area out by the coast there. What is it about this town, Fair Bluff? Why do they have these problems? Why doesn't anybody want to be there?
Well, you know, they have gotten a shot in the arm recently through some state funding to help move over their downtown. But remember why these communities were built around Eastern North Carolina? It was all around tobacco farming.
Mm.
Think about Wilson, North Carolina. Think about all of those
there
other stuff.
Go.
So we still have farming that is very good for those areas, but there's not as many farmers, right? They're all now corporate farmers or larger farmers. So a lot less people to have to manage and work on those agriculture places. There's a lot of hog farms. There's a lot of that stuff. So the industry, which was milling after the NAFTA free trade agreement, you know, left that area. So even any of the mills that people used to work in, that left and went to Mexico or to China or wherever they went. And then farming got less labor intensive. So the traditional capitalist sources of income in that area dried up, and the people still stayed because that's home. And this is something that has happened and continues to, you know, haunt that part of Eastern North Carolina for the past 40 years. Kinston, North Carolina had the first mall, like in North Carolina, like indoor mall.
Really?
Like,
you know,
as a child of the 80s.
Yeah.
That was
mall
like,
was a big deal.
It was a huge deal. And Kinston had it. Now Kinston doesn't have it. But again, it's just a function. I think things are looking better for them, and we continue as a state to invest in those regions. Mm-hmm. But that is the problem. And those are very big issues for them.
Mm, okay. Well, so that is something that is a, we're going to turn problems here around Iredell County and Lake Norman into opportunities, right? I like your positive mind shift on that. Well, we're coming up on another break here again. I threw out a hypothetical question to you earlier on your radio show.
Yeah.
I want to talk to my audience about A, B, and C today. I want to throw out another letter of the alphabet to you, and that's X.
Okay.
Rated X for the former Twitter, not any other reason, but that is one of my favorite parts of your show. We just got a few seconds here, but let's hit on that a little bit when we come back.
Oh, yeah. Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Rated X, if you've not heard it, great part of Vicky's show here every Friday on WSIC News Talk. News Drive at 5 here continues on with our conversation series. Patrick Reynolds chatting with Senator Vicky Sawyer. We'll be right back. News Drive at 5 conversation series continues on. Patrick Reynolds taking you home here alongside Senator Vicky Sawyer for a chit chat. Thank you so much for being in studio with us. This is great.
I'm enjoying it, and time goes by so
fast. So fast, so fast. Gee, I might have to have you back again.
Yeah, okay. That sounds great. Yeah.
We teed it up right before the last commercial break. Funny, cool segment. I find it very entertaining. Part of your show here every Friday on WSIC News Talk. The Rated X portion of your show from the former Twitter social media platform, now called X. Tell me about it.
Well, it is a great mental health tool for me because, so when you get elected, I don't know that anyone really can honestly tell you that when someone says nasty and mean things to you on Twitter, basically bullying, that it doesn't affect you. It does sometimes get to you, and I'll tell myself, like actually right now I'm going through something very, very hurtful on X.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I process it is I talk about it on my show. And remember Mean Tweets?
There was
a series.
One of the talk shows there.
Yeah. And they had like celebrities read the mean tweets.
Yeah, Jimmy Fallon or something. One of the talks. Seth Meyers, I can't remember. But yes, Mean Tweets.
Mean Tweets. So this is Mean Tweets version Rated X.
Okay.
And so it's just a play on that. And when I see these mean things, sometimes they're actually really funny. And they're more funny when my co-host David Koble reads them, and then I get to react to them, and I haven't seen them yet.
So it's live. You're
some
legit.
Of them are live. Oh. Sometimes I pick it out, but other times it's just every time I see it, I want to laugh. And so I've heard so many times from listeners to the show, just like you said, I try to listen every week, but the one thing I don't miss and make sure I listen to is Rated X.
Mm-hmm.
And they said they wait to the end of the show to make sure they hear what mean thing someone had said at me this week.
Yeah, mean tweets, mean X tweets.
Yes.
Gosh, you talked about it earlier, though, that you do want to talk to people. You do want to get information out there. And even if they're mad, you would like to hear from them. But people are brave and mean on a keyboard, you know, or their phone when they don't even have to put their real name or their real face out there. You would rather talk to them, even if they're mad, address you like a human being and talk to you, even if they are upset. That's better than a nasty X tweet, I guess.
Yeah, so I'm optimistic, and I believe in the power of good and the power of our government in having civil discourse. I have no assumption that just because I'm elected, I know everything. In fact, the more I know, the more I realize I need to learn, right?
Yeah.
Because the more you don't know, sometimes I want to unknow things. But I surround myself with very brilliant people who are resources and knowledge of things that I don't know about. So so that we can have conversations, even if we don't agree, and try to come up with a solution. I think that's the whole crux of what a democracy, actually representative republic, we're not a democracy. If you're a democracy, then every one of you would have to come vote every time we made any decision. Mm-hmm. That's a true democracy.
There's a difference.
We are a representative republic. But I think that's what our forefathers valued in a representative republic is civil and conversation about things that are thorny issues, but having an agreement to talk to one another like humans.
Mm-hmm. Deep question here coming up for
gotcha.
Me. I think it is anyway.
All right. Well, tell. Listeners will know.
What was your inspiration to first serve in public office? What inspired you to first say, I'm going to run?
Well, it was the volunteerism that I did in my kids' school.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that we needed, I kept asking questions about how things work, like just because I'm curious.
Yeah.
Like, how does school funding work? Or why does the county commissioner fund these things that way? Or da da da. You know, just all these questions. And I would thought I got to the answer. And then when I got to the elected, sometimes I was like, wow, that person's really cool. And sometimes I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
A little bit to be desired there.
And I was just like, wow, I'm sure he's well intended, but oh my God. And the more and more I got involved in my community and supporting and through youth athletics and just my natural curiosity mm-hmm. on how things work, I guess my feet followed my mouth. And next thing you know, I was had a bunch of people around me telling me that I need to run for office.
Okay. What was the first office that you ran for? Was it the one?
Oh, I'm a loser, by the way.
Oh,
I am.
Paper, not spiritually or hypothetically. Yeah.
I am a school board reject.
School board reject. You ran and did not win?
Correct.
School board? Okay.
To a very dear friend of mine, Martin Page.
Okay.
At the time, I didn't care for him.
Good friend.
Same
now.
Church. Oh my gosh. The tightest of friendships.
Okay, great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you'll see a lot of the folks who worked against me in my Senate campaign. We are very close now and tight because mm-hmm. I do believe in being able to disagree civilly and come back together and still break bread and have a meal together.
Yeah.
That's what we're supposed to do, right?
Yeah, it's the design. You talk about the founding fathers.
Yeah.
I think they had that in mind when we first formed the country. It was just that. It's like, you have a voice, I have a voice. Be totally opposites. 5 o'clock, 5:01, we clock out. Hey, what are you doing? Let's go eat.
Couple things real quick. One, we have a group, a text group with another senator, and we call it Ralph and Sam. Do you know, remember Ralph and Sam?
Ralph and Sam. Was that the big bulldog cartoon and the little, it was big bulldog and little
they
dog,
they used
yes?
to fight like cats and dogs.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, they would clock out. And they would take their lunch pail, and they would go have dinner together.
Yeah, it was.
Do you remember
that?
Yeah,
it was part of Bugs Bunny Looney Tunes. They were. They had the time clock on the tree. Yes, I do
we have that communication with folks across the aisle, and I love it because we do. We bloody each other up figuratively on the Senate floor.
Yeah.
We explain the reason why we have to vote and do that, and then we go have a drink afterwards. And we do that. And I believe in that process. And I want to carry that through. But that's another, the second point I want to make is that's kind of the reason why I do Rated X. Because I just want to exploit the ridiculousness of people who don't believe in that process.
Mm.
About that civil discourse that we should have and why America is so darn great to live in.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do have the freedoms to do that. And I don't think that gives you the freedom to call me like currently being called a pedophile lover.
Why in the...
See?
I can't even fathom that.
Right. So I can't take you seriously. At that point, you're not a serious person because you don't want serious change. All you seriously want to do is make yourself feel better at my expense.
Yeah.
That's your goal. That's not my goal. My goal is to create a better Iredell in North Mecklenburg County, a better North Carolina, and continue to make the United States as fabulous as it is to live in. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe in that process.
I asked you about road widening. Legitimate question to ask. A statement through social media. Pedophile lover. I don't even know as a radio host. How do I even talk about that or respond to it?
Yeah, you don't.
You can't. You can't.
Because that's what they want.
Ridiculousness.
Right. That's what they want is the ridiculousness, and they want your attention. And you know what that happens with me when I give them my attention? I'm taking time away from fixing 150. I'm taking time away for helping somebody get their driver's license. I'm taking valuable resources out of my life and wasting it on a dumpster fire. Mm. Because that's what I look at that when those people are like that. They're just dumpster fires. And I just turn away and walk away and laugh about them on Rated X.
Laugh at them. Yes. Good shot for you.
Yeah.
You remind me of a story I heard a few years ago, and it was by President Bush, President W. Bush, 43, spoke at President Bush's funeral, his father, Bush 41, reminded of him. And he spoke of his father and actually Bill Clinton, who defeated him in the 92 presidential election. Yet after their Democrat, Republican, fierce competitors for the office of the presidency, President Bush lost in 92. President Clinton came into office then. In the years to follow, the two of them became the closest of friends. And President Bush 43 said that at his father's funeral. He was, you know, he passed away. It was like Bill Clinton was one of his closest friends ever. And they were political rivals for the presidency of all things. So even with that spirit, a different form of politics, well, not really a different form, but a different
level,
we'll call it, of politics. I'm glad to see that politics can be civil. Because there's been a lot of nastiness and mudslinging in the last several years in politics. Yeah. There always has been. But
yeah. And that's a design. Do you know that's by design, right?
Yes.
It's by design because the far right and the far left continually throw these bombs at those of us who are common sense problem solvers to make us look terrible, because then they will control the narrative. If they control the narrative, they control the political spending. If they can control the political spending, then they control politics. I stand in the middle and stand on the center right, actually, as a Republican, to stand up against those people. Because I do not, if I hope more people like me and you come together and talk and have these conversations so that we can finally drown out these radical left and radical right, because they have been given too much power by our complacency.
I agree. I think most of the people listening to the show right now, WSIC's audience, your voters, we are liberal or conservative, but we're closer to the center, and the people on the way far right and the way far left have most of, I don't know, most of the noise, I guess, the biggest megaphones for some reason.
Yeah, and I don't see them as really being far right or far left. I actually put them in the same pot because they're just anarchist.
Mm.
They don't stand for anything other than destruction.
Trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stir the pot. Make
stir the pot. So let's laugh at them on Rated X.
Good place to put them is Rated X on Fridays at 11 a.m.
I bet you didn't know there were so many layers to that one little segment.
No, I had. Well, that's why I asked you.
Yeah.
So we can dig into it and find out. We are coming up on the end of the show. I have to ask you one final question.
Sure.
Would you come back?
Yes, of course.
Because I'll tell you, I've been talking to you, and viewers on the video on our social media might be able to see my laptop and my notes here. I had some things that I want to talk to you about. I never even got to half of them because you're a great conversationalist and explored so many other avenues. And I love that about a radio guest. It's fantastic to talk to you. So let's do it again.
Thank you. I'm sure we'll.
Hopefully we will. Yes. Senator Vicky Sawyer, everybody. She is running for re-election this
Correct.
November. Yes. And as well as every Friday mornings, 11 a.m. right here on WSIC News Talk. News Drive at 5 Conversation Series. This is Patrick Reynolds. We'll talk to you again.